and welcome to Tabletop Game Talk, On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Fletcher.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about theming in games. How much does theme matter? Is a pasted-on theme really all that bad? When is theme for theme's sake a bad thing, and how much should designers try to incorporate their theme within the mechanics of the game?
But first, as always, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, George Gia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, and Thomas Acciaretti. And a thank you to our newest patron, Gregory Huber. Also, thank you to everyone else who's a patron, and I love our patrons. Our patrons are great. Patrons are getting show notes now, and I think we may have a solution for live shows, live recordings. And they could have listened to the 25 minutes that we just talked about our next upcoming plan that we can't reveal. Stuff. Yeah.
Our warm-up. We're official. We're professional. We call it a warm-up.
Yeah, it's a lot of
Red leather, yellow leather.
Red. Yep,
there you go.
I should do more of those exercises for real. Okay, let's see. Last week, I think I went into a diatribe of Kickstarter for like 25 minutes at the beginning of the show. I'm not going to do that this week. No. This week, I will say I went to GaryCon. We only went for one day. We went for Saturday afternoon and evening. Played some KeyForge, met up with some friends, taught them KeyForge, showed off the baby, and then came home.
So has Zachary been to more conventions now than Fletcher?
Yes.
It was his second convention on his 6 weeks birthday, so he's doing pretty good so far. But
I can catch up.
Very cute. I saw the pictures.
He's got a life head start on you, though. So by the time he's your age, he like what? I mean, doesn't everyone go to a convention every weekend? Why wouldn't you? But he's gonna stop going to conventions as soon as he's old enough to not sleep most of the time. Which will be like Adepticon. Because that's in a couple weeks, and we can't bring him there because we plan on playing games all day long. So I was like, all right, grandparents, step up. Okay, next week is our feedback episode, and we're doing feedback on a bunch of things. I would give you a whole list of them, but just go to your podcatcher, your podcast app or the website or whatever. Just look at the last few episodes, and we're doing feedback on those. If you were part of the Google Play and you're only getting the 20 minutes of episode 132, I have no idea how to fix that if it doesn't fix itself. It's not the file. It's not the feed. It's nothing that we're doing. It's just something hiccuped on the Google Play side. But you can always listen to it on our website. If you go to our website, tabletopgametalk.com, you will always see the most recent episode there. And you can go back all the way back. In fact, if you go to our website and just go /TGT and put in the episode number, it'll bring you to whatever episode you want to listen. But then you have to memorize episode numbers. But
except for future ones, because those don't exist.
They don't exist yet. So if you go to 135, it depends on when you're listening to this.
It could exist.
Yeah.
Time.
Time. It's podcasting.
Time is relative.
It is totally relative. Speaking of time, Fletcher, you have news.
Yes. So as as Chris prophesized way back, I don't know, 5 episodes, 6, whenever I started.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I am now engaged.
Yay! So,
hooray.
Congratulations.
I got pictures. I was standing at GaryCon playing KeyForge. Actually, I was teaching at that point. And I looked down. I'm like, oh, I got a text message like 20 minutes ago. And it's just a bunch of pictures of you and Carmen in a ring. And I'm like, oh, I know what this means.
It's the one ring to rule them all. She got them. She can turn invisible now.
Yep. And she does. Boom. Gone. She was on camera a minute ago and then gone. So,
yep.
But I am especially happy for you guys. And not just because I introduced you.
Mostly because you introduced them.
Mostly because you could be like, yeah.
You owe me for the rest of your lives. Also, the marriage has to go well, because if it doesn't, then I get blamed for it.
You also get to blame that for the rest of your life.
So you also have a built-in marriage counselor, because it's in my best interest to keep it working.
Just keep mounting the pressure. Just keep pushing it on you.
You don't have a date or anything set, I'm assuming?
I think she has a date.
Next Thursday?
I think it's like in 2021 or something like that.
Ooh, that's a long time. Yeah, I was engaged for a year and a half.
She's still in her master's program. So she wants to finish that up before like really digging in, essentially.
So it wasn't like my sister where her boyfriend proposed and she's like, great, here's our wedding binder. I've been working on it.
No, it's kind of like that. She's already been like looking at venues and other things like that. So and it's not so a binder, but it's a website. It's like the knot or whatever. So.
Yeah, my only advice for wedding planning is let her do as much as she wants to do and then do anything she wants you to do.
Yeah.
And then get like your friend to sew a bunch of tablecloths for Harry Potter themed receptions.
Yeah, that works too. Yeah, get your friends involved because it, you know, it's always good to have friends involved. Yeah, I don't know. The typical advice is after you go through it, you always come away with saying, you know something? That cost a lot. We could have probably just been better off eloping and it would have been completely fine. So I'll give you that as a standard bit of advice, understanding that that's not going to happen.
Yeah, no.
No.
Yeah. So,
but yes, I'm looking forward to
moving
it.
On from our new marriage podcast.
If anyone has
this
advice,
this is babies and marriage podcast. Yep.
If anyone has advice for Fletcher, send it in. We'll share it on our feedback episode next week.
Yes. That's our topic for feedback next week is wedding planning.
Wedding planning. Yeah. It works. Yeah, it does all relate to our gaming lives, right? Because big life-changing events. It's like, well, I used to have all this free time, or I used to do this, or I used to do that. And it's like,
now
no.
I only play two-player games.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing's going to change.
Now I'm engaged and can't do anything at all.
Nope. Once that rings there, it's like you are
that's when you have the baby.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. No, I'm third shift. That's when I get most everything I done these days. So I just stay up till 5 o'clock and deal with it. Oh, and then we had daylight savings this week. So I'm like, we slept till 6 o'clock. We're making progress. And Sydney's like, no, it's really just 5 o'clock.
Five.
Yep. It's like, oh, that explains why I'm so exhausted right now. Okay. So anyway, let's get into a topic.
Topic. Themes.
Yeah.
Does your wedding have a theme yet?
All right. Do either of you?
It has colors. It has a color theme.
Ooh. What are the colors?
I don't know. All right. I can give you the hex values.
We'll find out. All right. We'll keep all wedding talk to post-credit banter.
Okay.
We're done with the next year. Mm. All right.
We're losing subscribers as we keep talking.
It's like, boom, done. Three patrons have dropped already. That's fine. Breaking my heart. Do you guys listen to Rotto at all or watch Rotto videos? Do you know who Rotto is?
No.
I'm aware of Rotto.
Okay. So I want to bring him up because I watch a fair number of his videos because he does a lot of Kickstarter stuff. And he has this kind of stream of consciousness, how to play, you know, he walks through playing a two-player game. And that's how he teaches the games and stuff. And it's really, he's kind of addicting to listen to. He also has a monthly podcast where it's like usually like 2+ hours long where he'll go over his top 10s that he did that month and then answer a bunch of game questions, answer a bunch of personal questions. He's an interesting guy to listen to. But I only bring it up because in his most recent podcast, someone asked the question about themes, which made me think about this, but not necessarily the reason that we're doing the podcast probably is because I'm like, oh, I need a topic and theme was on the top of my head. But one of the things he said was board games don't have themes. And at first I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And he's like, well, a theme. And I looked it up as a definition. So this is all part of the research part of our topic right now. A theme is the subject of a talk, a piece of writing, a person's thoughts, or an exhibition. It's a topic. And board games tend not to have themes because they're not really, you know, outside of story games. It's not theme that we're typically talking about in board games when we say theme. It's setting, where setting is a place or type of surroundings where something is positioned or where an event takes place. So for those
who's being pedantic.
Yes. well, and the thing is, you know, his point was language changes. You know, meaning, words, meanings, and things like that changes. And when we say theme in board games, we probably mean setting, but I don't care. We're going to keep saying theme, and that's just because that's what our board games are. They have a theme, which is their setting.
Yeah, well, I guess you could say, like, genre.
Yeah, which is a kind of a superset of everything else.
I think it can be a theme, and I think that this gets maybe more into, like, the deep part of the topic is, if it is a good theme, it is a theme. And if it is a pasted on, what we call pasted on theme, maybe it's just a setting.
Ooh.
That you can put the same gameplay into multiple settings. But if you have a themed game, it doesn't make sense in a different setting.
Okay. So basically what you're saying is if the theme really holds true, it starts to tell a story that yes. is the sub, and the subject of that story is the theme that the board game is trying to bring out.
Yes. So I'm going to put up Spencer's favorite board game, I think, ever that he's ever played, and that is Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
When you are playing that game, it is, sure, set in the universe of Battlestar Galactica, but it also feels as though it is Battlestar Galactica themed because the way the gameplay goes, it tells a story. And that's what Spencer loves about this game, is when he's playing it, I'm playing this character. The choices that I have to make as this character make sense for the character in the show to be making. And the way the cards come up, it tells the story of the show. So you're trying to do the same, make the jumps. You're trying to find the Cylons. You're trying to do the same actions that they are taking in the show. And they've made them really well constructed. So when you're given that choice with the information you have, it feels like you are actually playing out an episode of this show that just hasn't been written yet. And that is a really good theme.
Yeah.
Where something like photosynthesis seems more like a setting. We've set this abstract game in a forest, but it could also be underwater, or it could also be in space. It's just a thing that happens.
Right. It could be anything because, you know, the idea, the concept there is interesting. You're coming from one direction in photosynthesis, and depending on where your pieces are, they're going to give you more or less points, or basically currency. But that doesn't necessarily, like, it works there. I see what you're saying, that it doesn't tell the story so much as, okay, the sun's going around, and I get that.
Yeah.
I like your Battlestar Galactica example, and it's not one I put on my list, but it's great because that theme there is very easy to tell the story with. When you're playing Battlestar Galactica, it is hard for you to just say the mechanics are the mechanics and I'm completely disconnected from what the theme of this game is. That is a very, very strong connection of theme to gameplay. Unlike some other games, and I don't want to go into abstract. Let's touch on abstract just quickly. As a mm-hmm. definition, it's the existence of thought or an idea, but not having physical or concrete existence. So with what my big example here is Homeworlds, which is a pyramid arcade game. And, you know, it's just basically plastic pyramids. But the theme of that game, of that abstract game, is these pyramids represent either stars or ships. But really, they're just triangles on the board. And they have different movements. They do different things. Now, when I'm playing that game, for some reason, I am kind of pulled into the theme of it. It's like, I feel like these are ships. I feel like I'm, you know, going around and jumping from star system to star system. But it's a very, very abstract game.
I would say like chess. Exactly. Yes.
Jinx.
I would say that's in stereo, but we only record in mono. So
you'll be a Coke.
But exactly. Chess is the same thing. Chess feels like there's a theme there. It feels like there should be some kind of theme there, but it's still a very abstract game. You know, what does it mean to move a pawn? What does it mean to, you know, move your bishop? And why is your bishop, you know, attacking a knight? Like those things, it's not necessarily theme for immersion's sake. It's theme for maybe memory, like just helps you kind of remember what the pieces are, as opposed to the round thing with the extra round thing on top of it, which would be a bishop.
So I will say, though, that like sometimes a story-based game doesn't actually, like the mechanics don't necessarily theme well into the story. It's like the mechanics almost like trigger the story. It's like above and below can be kind of like this, where you like do a thing and then I read the story. And it doesn't feel as much like my actions on the board are making the story happen. It's like, I am playing a game and then I get a bunch of flavor text. It's like a cutscene in a video game that has nothing to do with the gameplay.
Does flavor text help? And above and below, I completely agree. I don't think the stories really add to the game itself at all. But in games, does flavor text do that for you guys? Is like if some, well, I don't want to go back to Battlestar because I don't think there's a lot of flavor text in Battlestar. I don't think there's any. But something like the only thing I can think right now is Magic the Gathering. There's a lot of flavor text on those cards.
Keyforge.
Yeah. Or Keyforge. There's flavor text on those cards. Does that help sell that theme to you guys?
Not necessarily.
Not really. I think they even have that fun in Terraforming Mars.
Yeah.
Some cards.
And, well, in Terraforming Mars, that's another one that is on my list of games to talk about for theme. So, Fletcher, you like Terraforming Mars.
I do.
How do you feel the theme plays into that like?
So, I don't know. It's like anything else. Like, the theme, it's like a space theme, right? So I'm immediately, like, more intrigued by it than I probably would otherwise be if it was something else. But specifically, the flavor text is just kind of, like, more interesting than anything else. I don't think it gives it, like, a big boost. But, yeah, I mean... I don't know. I don't know if I have an answer.
If it was a different thing. So a lot of things, a couple things about Terraforming Mars. Well, first, before I forget, there is a Kickstarter going on right now for Terraforming Mars. not for Terraforming Mars specifically, but for a tile set for Terraforming Mars that would make me play this game. It is a fully, all of the different tiles you put on the board are like these molded 3D tiles that have places for the cubes and stuff. And the water looks amazing. Like, I would... If I had this set, I would be like, okay, let's play Terraforming Mars, which makes me think that there's something about the theme of Terraforming Mars relating to the reason why I just can't put it on the table.
I don't think it's the theme, and I don't want to be very critical, but I'm going to be. I think it's the graphic design.
Potentially. Actually, not potentially. I would say related. It's definitely, definitely related.
Because I like the theme. I think the theme is fun. I think terraforming, I love space. The Martian is a great read. It feels kind of in that vein. I like the theme. The board, to me, I find it very visually confusing. And the rule book, especially, I feel like the graphic design and the layout is very hard for me to understand. And once I get into the game, once I get playing it, I enjoy it. But it's one of the games that I don't like to teach people because it's hard for me to do a good job. That makes me frustrated.
Yeah. Which is actually, that makes sense. So graphic design, and kind of like this graphic design is a whole separate thing. And I keep threatening to do an episode on it. But it sort of weaves its way in there because theme is sort of sold by that graphic design. But Terraforming Mars has a number of things. Like, Terraforming Mars to me is oozing with theme. It's all over the place. But it's a realistic theme. You know, it's almost like all of the cards are scientifically viable, right? It's space, but it's not sci-fi. It's science now, essentially. Like, this is how we would go about terraforming Mars if we were going to terraform Mars right now.
It's not science fiction like, I don't know, like Star Wars. It's more of science fiction kind of in the vein of like Star Trek, where it's like more based in science fact.
Yep. But like, there is nothing in Terraforming Mars which is send a, you know, an oxygen creation satellite or something like that. Like, you're not doing anything in Terraforming Mars that science today isn't theoretically able to do, you know, creating oxygen.
If we could just get it to Mars.
Right.
That's the hard part.
Sure. Right. So, but, and even then, it's something that we can do, like, theoretically as possible. It may be super expensive or whatnot, but it is possible.
Impractical.
Right. Yeah.
And I like that. I like the way it makes you think. I think in that way, the storytelling element of Terraforming Mars is one of the better aspects of the game. And the mechanics of the game aren't bad. It's always just the setup and the learning for me. And I have to relearn it every time I play because I always get intimidated of relearning it again. And I don't know what it is. Because the theme is engaging to me. So there's something else going on there.
Yeah. Well, my shallow take on it is, if there is a new version of Terraforming Mars, which there definitely will be, they've already announced their fifth expansion, they're going to milk this for all that it should be milked for. Because it is a great game. For all intents and purposes, regardless of what I feel about it, it is a great game. There are people out there that love it, that play it over and over and over. There's no way that I can say it is not a good game. It's not a game for me for a number of reasons. And a lot of it has to do with theme. Although I think you're right. Graphic design is the bigger piece. If they redo this in a deluxe version and when it puts on the table, like it pulls me in and they normalize all the art. I don't even think I have a problem with any one piece of art on the cards. It's that the art feels so inconsistent across the cards. All of those things take me out of what this is as a strong theme, and it kind of just pulls me back away from it. And I'm like, okay, now this is just a game where I'm playing cards to try to build an engine, which is fine. And oh, I'm up my board, so my pieces are off. And
yeah.
So, but all those are just like minor.
But those shiny cubes are so cool.
I do like the shiny cubes.
The shiny cubes are so neat.
So, but I do find that there's a lot of, you know, if we're talking about like Euro games, because that's what Terraforming Mars is. It's not an abstract game.
No, it's a themed game. I think the theme plays well.
It does. But
there's something also, else going on there.
Yeah, but it also so this is a type of thing, and this is where we kind of get into Euro games versus Ameritrash games. One of the fundamental differences between them is Euro games have a pasted on theme, and I'm not saying that in a derogatory term. I'm just saying usually it's a theme that if you stripped away the theme, the mechanics by itself would still hold up and you would have no problem playing the game. Where with the Ameritrash games, like it's the theme is kind of the game. And if you stripped away the theme, you're stripping away significant portions of the game, because a lot of Ameritrash games are roll this die. You know, did you do enough damage to kill that thing? So if you pulled away the theme, it's roll dice. Did you roll higher than a 12? No, you lost, which is not a game anymore. Right. So it's that. And I know
an
I'm
an activity.
It's not. Shush, we're not going there. It's not the same game. It becomes something different when you pull the theme away from it. Now, Terraforming Mars, that theme, and Mars, I've never really been into Mars, which is another reason I have a hard time getting into that theme. I don't know. If you pulled that away, would the game still be compelling? Probably not. All right. This is why we're having this conversation. I want to find out why Terraforming Mars is that's not actually it at all. I just picked up, so I don't remember who emailed, so I apologize, but I did pick up the Prelude expansion. So I'm going to play Terraforming Mars. It's on my short list of things to do over the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to give it another chance, and it'll be like the fourth time I've played it. So I think I have a general understanding. I'll have to reteach myself. And all right, when the brown box is there, what does that mean? But I'll figure that out. And then I'll go and back these tiles on Kickstarter for like $150. And I'll be like, look how pretty they are. Okay.
I like this game.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Games with theme. We can move on from Terraforming Mars. Let's go to Viticulture and Wingspan. Viticulture. Looking at the box, and you guys have both played this. I think I've played it with both of you. I think I played it maybe not at the same time, but you've both have played
it.
Not
at the same time.
It is a, you know, Stonemaier Games, you're doing wine thing. The theme of this game.
You're doing wine thing, yeah.
You're doing wine things. You're managing a vineyard. It's awesome.
Eloquent as always.
Yes. The theme of this game, to me, really comes out. Even though it's a Euro-style game, like I feel like you can't remove the theme from Viticulture without kind of removing the feel of the game from Viticulture. And even though the box was kind of like, you know, okay, fine, it's, you know, someone standing in front of a vineyard. Once I played that game once, I'm like, okay, I get what I'm doing. I want to do this. The actions I'm taking make sense within the theme of the game. And it makes it easier to teach. When I'm teaching this game, it's really, really simple, because I'm like, you're making wine, and you have to plant vines, and you're going to have to harvest them, and you're going to have to age your grapes, and you're going to have to build a cellar so you can have better wine. And all of this stuff kind of makes sense. And I like, to me, Viticulture is amazing.
But I think it is in some ways abstract, because you are doing these things and you've given them the terms, but you could have made it something else. And I don't know what that is necessarily, but there's nothing like about it that is like, I don't think they sat down and said, I'm starting with wine and then I'm going to make the game. They started with an idea about a game and then they thought, oh, this fits wine. I'm wrong though.
I don't know about that. Like,
I could be wrong.
I mean, I don't know anything about the history of the game or anything like that, or how true to life it is. But like, if someone's into wine, like, these are all things you have to do, like we can gamify the aspect of like making wine.
So one of the most common questions that game designers are asked, and you can find this anytime you see an interview with a game designer, is do you start with theme or mechanisms first? Although they normally say mechanics, which again is another term that's being, you know, kind of redefined to be, mean mechanisms in games. But in any case, and oftentimes that question is always met with an eye roll. And then some people will actually answer. It's like, oh, I always start with mechanics first, or I always start with theme first, or it's kind of a simultaneous thing. I think that in a lot of cases, theme will help drive the designer's, you know, kind of what the game's supposed to do. I am fully convinced that Viticulture started out with, I'm going to make a game about making wine. Because
I think
I think that the mechanics of that game or the mechanisms of that game, some of them don't make sense outside of, you know,
making wine.
So it's like, all right, there are a few pasted on ones like, you know, visitors. I need a way of making sure that people can get not the visitor cards. The visitor cards are great. The tour action is actually what I mean. I need a way of allowing people to make money. So you can give a tour and that'll give you money. I think that may have been like an action that was pasted on saying, okay, well, we need a way of doing this. But all of the other things in there are very related to what you would do if you were running a vineyard. And I think that doesn't just happen and then you put a theme on top of that. I could be wrong.
No, but I think you start with like a couple of the actions and you think like, oh, wouldn't it be fun if there was a game that did this? That reminds me of making wine. Let's build on it. Like, I think they kind of like develop around each other. And I'll go back and say that, yeah, maybe Viticulture, it was totally about making wine from the beginning. I can see that being the case. But also, if you think about the individual actions as much, there's no story to it as much.
No, I guess. No. It's a Euro game.
It's a Euro game.
Yep.
You're taking your actions, you're just, you know, you're getting points. Yeah. That's the whole thing, is you're doing these things, and yes, it feels like you're making wine, but it's all just to fill orders to make points. And it's funny because that feels very capitalist to me for a Euro game.
So, yes, and I wanted to jump to Todd's input on this one, because I think that he brings up theme as, because what you just mentioned is Viticulture is not telling a story. And while I admit that the story that comes out of Viticulture is not as easy as the story that comes out of a game of Battlestar Galactica,
perhaps it's just not as compelling a story.
Right.
It's still maybe a story, though.
So Todd says, I'm going to summarize this because if you want to get the full Todd effect, go to our forums at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. So he says, Tigris and Euphrates has been described by some as a game of four colors. And this is a game where you're basically laying tiles to build kingdoms, and kingdoms will fight and you'll merge different sections and different sections will break up. But he says, if you imagine the tiles you're laying as kingdoms that you're building, and the merger or separation of kingdoms are the results of war, there's a ton of themes there. And then he says, Arkham Horror is a game that people say is dripping with theme. But there, he says, when he plays it, he feels like, okay, I move my piece here, I have to do something, I roll dice and see what the result is. And there's like no theme at all. Ultimately, what he gets at is theme is in the eye of the beholder. And theme is what you make of it. So if I want to tell the story about the vineyard that I planted my first vine and finally I got some white grapes and I started crushing those grapes and, oh man, the next thing I needed to do was just make a bottle of wine. But then I really, really was thinking I want to do champagne. So how am I going to get to champagne? And then I started building up my cellar so that I could, you know, you could build that story if you wanted to. I don't know many people who do, but you could.
And then you realize you don't have any orders for champagne and you've lost the game because you were looking at it backwards, because you don't start with grapes. You start with your orders in that game. And that's where it feels a little bit backwards and off theme for me, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are some things that you still have to make it a game. So you know what you're going to, you know, the orders you're trying to fill way before you plant your first vines.
Yeah.
So, but that's, you know, maybe it's like, oh yeah, I was on the internet and people were looking for this kind of wine and I think I could make that wine. So because I know there's a demand for it, I'm going to go. See, you can spin theme any way you want.
So what Todd, I think, is pointing out here, though, that I don't know if this is what he meant, but this is what it's reminding me of, is that there are some games where you are telling the story, like Tigris and Euphrates. You are making things happen, whereas Arkham Horror is telling you a story. you are in the game being told a story and your actions kind of give you the choice of the story you're going to have, but it's more that you are within a story that is being told to you. Whereas with a maybe more abstract game, even, it might lend itself more to your storytelling.
So, Fletcher, you told us before we went live, I think, that you are starting a new game of Gloomhaven.
Yes.
So, to Kitty's point, how do you feel the theme in Gloomhaven comes out? Is it telling you a story? Are you playing a story, or are you really just playing the mechanics of the cards and you're solving puzzles of the scenarios?
I think I'm really the only one that is playing more towards the story, because I'm kind of like interested in all of the supporting texts and like the scenarios that go around. And I would say that the people that I play with are typically more interested in like the results and what do I get and how to min-max my character. I'm also interested in that as well. Like how do I min-max my character? What's the best way to like play this character? But I'm usually more interested than the other people that I play with of like what is going on in this world and how does this kind of world like fit together.
So that's interesting, because that really goes directly to Todd's point of you guys are playing the same game, but you are interested in the story, at least where it's going, and you know, making choices that actually affect that story, where everyone else is just like, yeah, yeah, whatever. Tell me how much money I get and you know, give me the cards I can buy.
Yeah, how many experience points do I get? How much money do I get? Like, yep. did we get a cool item this time or no? And I'm more interested in like, no, like there's a big overarching theme here and I kind of want to like dig at it and pick at it and figure out what it is.
So are you the one that's picking the next scenario each time, or you're like, okay, these are the different things we can do? And are they like, okay, well, I have this life goal that I need to kill demons. So where are we going to find demons?
I'm typically the one that is playing more of the historian. So with the actual of like, what's going on in the party and like who the major players are that we've come up against. I'm the one that's like remembering all of that over and over through all the different scenarios and each different time we play. And it's like, no, 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 this character was a bad guy, but then we like did this and we double crossed them over here. And now we're doing this thing. And I'm like weaving like what we're doing together as opposed to just like, you know, seeing like which scenarios we have available and being like throwing a dart at one. And it's like, okay, now we're doing this one. And I'm the one that's
looking
like,
at the scenarios and being like, oh, which one's going to get us the most stuff?
Right.
Or which exactly. one do I think is going to be the best for my character? No, you right. want to like pick them based on the flavor.
Yeah, I'm picking them based more on the flavor and also just like, this is why we're doing this scenario. Yeah. It's because like, this is the little mini story arc that we're on so far.
Yeah.
Where the people I'm playing with are just like, okay, whatever. Like, let's just kill these demons get
sure,
our gold.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. A game that we have all played, because this is leading me down a path of theme. I agree with Todd. Theme is what you make of it. But one game that's been brought up, and let me find this real quick, as a game that has like a just oozing with theme is Wingspan. And Chris yep. actually mentioned this. He says, solid themes only enhance the gameplay experience. A good example of this is Wingspan. I had various birds as pets growing up and have always really liked birds. Since a bird theme is so ingrained in Wingspan, due to the unique bird cards, bird feeder, eggs, and various bird food, I always really enjoy my experience playing it. I believe Wingspan would not be as enjoyable void of its theme. Does Wingspan have a strong theme?
I disagree.
Okay. Elaborate.
I feel like while I do enjoy the theme of Wingspan, like I have no particular attachment to birds or anything like that. And I love the art and I love learning about like, you know, the flavor cards and just like learning about the bird itself. That's all very cool. But to me, this is like a mechanics driven game and yeah. you can replace birds with, you know, dingbats or whatever. And like the different areas and zones with like just totally made up things. And I feel like the game would be just as fun as long as you use like the same kind of, I feel like art also plays a big deal into the game. And they yes. do like a really good job with the art and everything. And I think it helps that it's
amazing
like
amazing art.
Yeah. That it's relatable. Like you may have like seen these birds or like you know about birds as opposed to like just making something up out of entirely whole cloth. But to me, I probably would enjoy this game just as much, whether it was birds or something made up.
I also think it does a really good job of being a really tactile game. the dice, they have a really good weight to them. They've got the eggs on your board, and just the whole look of the game, plus the weight of it. It's, I don't know what it is, but like, I love the components of the game too. And there's something about the look of it on the table that really draws you in. And I don't know if it actually has anything to do with the bird theme or if it's just really beautiful art plus good components.
It's very colorful.
Yeah.
It is. I would it has say great table presence.
Wingspan is a work of art. Like, it truly is a work of art. But I would also agree that Wingspan is not strong in theme. It is strong in art direction for certain. For example, if you were to replace all the birds with fictitious planets, and you have three different types of planets that you could settle, and that was your row, and those three planets, they either generated a resource, they allowed you to explore new planets, or I'm forgetting what the third one does, it's food, gets you fuel, or whatever the case.
Yeah.
You know, terraforming equipment, so you could settle new planets. And then the terraforming equipment were the food. Like, you essentially have the exact same game now themed in space. And it would be, you know, play-wise, identical. Now, if the components did not have the same thing, it may not draw you in as well, because that art piece aspect may not be there as much. And this is a problem that Wingspan had. So I think we can agree that the theme of Wingspan is birds. Like, whether or not it's a strong theme or not, the bird theme is there, or at least the bird setting, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But this was a problem, and the reason that Wingspan is impossible to get right now. And the next thing I want to talk about, theme when you're trying to decide to buy a game or not. When you look at that box cover, when you look at, because you're not looking, I haven't seen many box covers or box backs that actually tell you anything about the gameplay. You're looking at the theme, you're looking at the components, if they're pictured, and you're making your decision based on that, or at least, you know, without any other extra reviews. And a lot of people, that's how they're buying games. They're looking at a box like, oh, this looks cool. I'm not particularly into birds. If I had picked this, I saw this game in a game store, I would have just walked right by it. I would have not given it a second thought. Because I know Stonemaier Games, and because I get his emails and, you know, his newsletters, I'm like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. We'll see what it is. That's the reason I bought it, is because of the producers, you know, the publisher, the designer.
But because it was a bird theme, that's how I have your copy now.
Yes. Well, exactly. It's 'cause it's like, and I would actually play this game quite frequently. I would even play it solo. It's one of those games that's so fast and easy to play that I would, you know, I could start it up and play it whenever.
This game is one of my most played games in my entire collection already.
Yeah.
My family loves this game. And it is one of the only games, I make my family play games a lot, and they're really good sports and they'll play with me. This is one of the only games where I have had it requested to come back to my parents' house. Like, hey, are you good? And they don't ever call it Wingspan. They just call it birds.
But it's not because they don't play it, and it's not the most played because of the theme of birds.
No.
They play because it's fun, and I would say it has like a strong cohesive theme.
It makes sense within its theme, but also it is not because of the theme that it gets played. It is because it is a good game, but the fact that my family just calls it birds makes it, it's themed.
I think the theme does have an effect, though. There is a play here, because I think that if this game were a space game, and again, you're colonizing planets, I don't think it keeps the same family level appeal that Wingspan does.
It's also less relatable, I would say.
Yes. Like, the theme of Wingspan may not drive people in, but it doesn't drive people away either once they've played the game. And that's what's fascinating about this.
I think space kind of has a reputation for being complicated.
Yeah.
When you look at a game that has a space theme, like, there's like a kind of automatic assumption of like, this probably has a lot of rules and I don't want to learn it. Whereas birds feel very approachable. Everyone has birds in their backyard. And the art is very pretty. You know, if it's pretty art, it can't be that hard to learn. I think it's a really good strategy to get people to maybe pick up a heavier weight game than they think they're getting into, but one that's also really well designed. So it's not too hard to get into either.
The theme is very disarming. If you had a heavy fantasy or a heavy space or even like a moderate trading in the Mediterranean theme on there, those themes are a little bit more intimidating than Wingspan. Oh, it's just birds. And it's easy. This is what you have, how it works. Like, oh, okay. Oh, and it looks so cute. And can I eat those? No, you can't eat them.
Right? They look like
please don't eat these.
Them. Yes. Please Michael actually, so Michael mentions, he's like, a theme I really dislike will keep me from trying a game, no matter what else is going on, designer, mechanisms, production quality, etc. On the other hand, many of my favorite games have themes that are somewhat pasted on and could have been anything. But even then, the theme is more relevant and present in my mind than in one of the most than that of most people. In other words, he will tell the story for the game. So, and he mentions Rado does this too. Like one of the things Rado mentions is the theme doesn't, it doesn't matter if the theme is pasted on or how weak it is. It's like, if you want to tell the story of the game, you can tell that story. You don't need the game to do it for you. Michael's kind of in that same boat. He says, it seems to me that the best way for a game to be is for it to have a solid mechanism and have your activities all make sense in line with the theme. And I totally agree with this. And he brings up Viticulture, Tokaido, Among the Stars, and Terraforming Mars is all games that do this. And I completely agree. Terraforming Mars, you know, that theme and the game mechanisms, they truly tie in together. You can like, yeah, doing this would raise the oxygen level. Totally makes sense. Doing this over here. Yes, I can see this making water. 100%. I understand what I'm doing and why it's affecting the game and the way it is. And I agree here. I really like this. Wingspan, I don't think does that, but it's still brilliant in what it does and that setting that it puts you in. It's not off-putting. And you're like, yeah, okay, I like this. I'm laying eggs. Fine.
So I have a game that keeps popping into my mind, and I can't figure out how I feel about its theming. So I'm going to throw it out to you, Chris. I don't know if you've played this one before, Fletcher. That is Imhotep. It is Egyptian-themed. You are building pyramids and obelisks and tombs, but really you're just moving cubes around to specific places using little, they look like little boats. I will say the boats are the most theme part to me. I don't know, but like, I remember the theme. I remember the art. I liked it. I picked it up initially because it was Egyptian. I like Egyptian things. Really, I picked it up because you owned it and said, hey, let's play this today. But, you know, I was real into it because of the theme initially, but I don't know how much it actually adds to the gameplay, and there's no real, it feels very abstract once you get into it.
So this gets into a whole nother category of this is the kind of the pasted on part of theming, and I don't think it's bad. So Imhotep is an abstract game. In all ways, it's an abstract game, but the theme allows you to play into that abstractness of it. You're building things. And Egypt, when we think about Egypt, we think about building the pyramids. And one of the things you can do there is, you know, help build the pyramids. So that concept allows you to adapt to the gameplay of this abstract game, where if it was just cubes and colors, and I tried to teach this to you, you would have a whole lot harder time, like, just picturing why am I doing all of these different things? Because there's a number of different things that you can do, and the order you do it matters, and where your blocks, where your colored blocks matters, and all of these things, they matter. But without that theme, whether it's pasted on or not, I think this game falls flat. And I think it's just like, well, I have no idea why I'm doing these things. And
I think it also helps purpose. To learn.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead, Fletcher.
Yeah, the actions don't make any sense without purpose.
Exactly.
Even if the purpose is completely made up.
Right. And this is why I don't think pasted on themes, and I'm using that in air quotes every time I say it, is a bad thing. I think it's a theme is a way of helping people get into the game. And just because that theme can be removed doesn't mean that it's a bad theme or it's weakly themed.
It's not worthwhile.
Right. As long as that theme helps you play the game. Something like Azul, for example, has no theme to it. It's pretty, but there's zero theme to it. But there's also only, I think, three rules to the game. And so,
excuse me, you were building a mosaic.
Sure. But how you do that, like, I don't know that I need to. Yes. Okay, fine. But the theme does not help me learn the game because the game isn't complicated enough to need to be learned there. That abstract game is fine.
Yep.
Checkers is a great example. You know, checkers versus chess. Chess needs a theme to help teach you what the different pieces can do.
Yeah.
Whether it's pasted on or not. Checkers does not. It's here's all your pieces. Everything does the same thing. There is no theme here. Like there's, you know, King Me I think it's just a term. It's like you're not actually feeling like I'm turning my little checker pieces into kings.
Onitama?
Onitama also doesn't have... Onitama is like a full abstract.
Yeah, but it sort of has a theme. Like, isn't he like a little... Is this the one with the little emperor and the other guys?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I was thinking of a chess variant. Onitama sort of has a theme. You are like a master, a sensei master at a dojo or something like that.
But it's more like art.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and even the moves there are like, there's animal names to the moves. I'm going to perform the turtle move or the lizard move or whatever. They help you kind of like name those moves, but they don't need to have names. Like the part that's important there. So Onitama essentially is you have a piece. You're going to pick one of five pieces you're going to move. You have two cards that tell you what type of movement you can do. And you can just do that. Those cards all have names to them. And then the cards cycle around. So you're always playing with the same five cards in the game. And it is a relatively abstract, it is an abstract game, but there's just enough theme there to make it easier to learn and to make it kind of fun because I love playing with the Phoenix move or whatever the case is. Like, oh yeah, we're going to play this.
So I've never played this game, but it sounds like when you're describing it, like it gives the game structure, more structure than if you just strip out everything.
Yes.
I also wonder though if it is off-putting to some people because it is, I don't want to give people like no credit here, but it's hard to pronounce. It's foreign sounding. It's tricky. And I know that I have a hard time. For years, I couldn't say Carcassonne seriously all the time. I don't know if I still say it right. If it's Carcassonne, Carcassonne. I don't know if it's a regional difference, what it is, but I would be like, I want to play that game, but I don't know how to ask how to play that game. And I wonder if even just like, you know, giving something, I don't want to like, you know, we don't have to Americanize everything. We don't want to take culture out of everything. But if you are somebody who's designing a game in the US, do you want to give it a, you know, marketable, easy to pronounce, approachable theme or name, or is that, you know, is there some like exclusivity to it? Is there something interesting about like, well, I only want people who are really going to care about playing it to get into this? I don't know.
Naming games is sort of a lost cause for two reasons. And this is a bit of a tangent, but it's kind of an interesting one. Number one, you want to have a name that you can trademark in some way. So there's something to that, although the games you just mentioned are not necessarily trademarkable. But look at Settlers of Catan or Settlers of Catan or Catan. I don't know. Well, let's just rename it. And you know, everyone calls it Settlers. No. Let's just call it Catan, or maybe it's Catan. I don't know. But so I don't think people really think too much about it. Look at Teotihuacan. Like, I know that I say that differently than the designers would say it, but the designers, like, if you make an attempt at it, you're successful. Like, some games are, the name is just part of that theme to a point where it's just, it's a living part. Agricola versus Agricola. I think it's Agricola.
I don't know. Maybe it's just like my doing the Dice Tower news has made me afraid of this because I am so concerned. Every week, I'm just reading names over and over again. And you know, this podcast, we don't really edit, so you get to hear as we speak, but the Dice Tower News gets some heavy editing because halfway through, almost every week, I stop and go, how are we saying this? How do we say this? Do I need to go Google this? Is this a real word? Is this a made up word? Am I butchering somebody's native language? Or is this just something that a designer says, oh, this sounds cool. I don't know. I can trademark it.
Is it like Haagen-Dazs?
Yeah. I know. And it's tough. And maybe it's just something that is only a concern for me, but I don't know.
Yeah. But I do think it's part of this selection. Like, you know, a game theme, just like its name, can be off-putting. You know, if I'm looking at Teotihuacan, and that's how I say it, and I'm like, I can't even pronounce that out loud. Maybe I just look past that. Even though, you know, it has a great designer attached to it or, you know, whatever the case is, it's like, But I think theme can do that as well. It kind of works the same way. All right. So we have
I think name is kind of like a part of the theme. It, like it at least if they're doing a good job, they like tie into each other. So yeah.
All right. I do want to cover one more thing on themes because I think these are important because when we're talking about themes, more than anything, we're talking about, you know, what draws people into buying the game sight unseen. Or not sight unseen, but you know, review one
game unplayed.
Game unplayed. Oh, that's a nice one. I like that. So, and I think one of the ways that publishers do this, and oftentimes designers do not start with these, well, IPs. When we're talking about something like Harry Potter, Star Wars, Lord of the Ring, these are IPs that come outside of the game industry. Now, typically a designer does not say, I'm going to make a Harry Potter game, and then I'm going to try to go to a publisher and sell my Harry Potter game. That is almost never what happens. What usually happens is a publisher gets a license and says, okay, I need to make a Harry Potter game. I'm going to find a designer and say, this is what this Harry Potter game needs to do. These are our restrictions. Design a game within those constraints. And oftentimes it's very short too. So a lot of times, that's why we kind of get a bad rap for IP games, IP being intellectual property, because those IP games are tend to have a shorter development time and a shorter basically design and development time. We just want to get them out there. This is way different now. In the past 5 or 6 years, it's way, way different. We have actually the past decade or so, we've had some great IP games. But are you likely, and I'm going to start with an example right after I ask this question. Are you likely to buy a game based on IP alone? And before I say, before I let you answer, Kitty, you've mentioned Labyrinth multiple times on this show. I've never gone out and bought Labyrinth, but I walked into the Gift of Games and they had Labyrinth Harry Potter edition. And I said, I must own this. So I bought Labyrinth Harry Potter edition. So for me, the answer is yes, there are certain IPs where I will absolutely take a much closer look and potentially buy it based on that IP alone.
I will buy a game with an IP that I enjoy, but I will not buy every Harry Potter theme game out there. It's not enough to get me to buy it. Just like, oh, I slapped Harry Potter on the front. Oh, I got to own it. But it will draw me in. And there are definitely IPs out there where when I see, like, if I'm walking through a dealer's hall at a convention, I'm going to look at it and be like, oh, look, it's a new Firefly game. I wonder if this one's going to be any good. And I'll pick it up and look at it. And I wouldn't have picked up, you know, a generic space-themed game because there's a bazillion of them. But I like Firefly, so I'm going to go pick that one up and give it a second glance further than I would maybe a different, like, space cowboy pirates game.
What about you, Fletcher?
I would say no. I don't buy board games very often. And I usually lean a lot more towards gameplay than I do on IP, especially because maybe things have been changing in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, like you said. But having that same kind of headspace of like, okay, like they are leaning on the IP of this game to sell it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm afraid of. Like, this is not going to be as good a game as others because it's like, oh, this is Star Trek. This is recognizable. Oh, this is Harry Potter. It's recognizable.
You seem much more like a researcher, though. Like, you don't buy a game on a whim. You seem to like, I'm going to pick out the game I'm going to buy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to like pick out this game. I'm going to do research and I'm going to figure out like what kind of game I would like to buy. I'm not the person that's going to walk into, you know, a game store and buy a game. You know, game unplayed without doing any research.
So yeah, or getting like a recommendation. Videos. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you guys, Kitty, you watch Game of Thrones, right?
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Fletcher, are you up on Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Okay. Which is, so this, maybe that's a bad question, but the Game of Thrones card game, which is actually really, really good. Is that a game you would get? If I told you, like, this is how this game plays, and the gameplay sounds interesting to you, but you weren't in on Game of Thrones, would you be less likely to want the game because of the IP that was attached to it?
I don't think I would be less likely to want a game. If it came with a recommendation from people that I trust, like, no. But it wouldn't be a selling point for me either.
Interesting. Yeah, because, I mean, I've gotten games that were based on IPs, board games that were based on IPs, that I didn't even realize were based on IPs. And but once I found out they were, I felt like, well, I can't really play this game until I go and catch up on all the media that goes along with it. I'm looking at you, Expanse.
I guess I could kind of see that with, like, maybe, you know, there's some hesitation with, like, me playing, Kitty, you mentioned, what's the game based on a TV show? Battlestar Firefly? Galactica.
Oh, Battlestar Galactica. Yeah.
Yeah, because that has, like, a giant mythos behind that entire series. And personally,
also,
for
like,
me,
the game
I burned
is,
out.
Like, spoilers for the show.
Right. Like, and
you,
while I really like the
know.
Universe. Yeah, while I like the universe, I, like, burned out in season two.
Oh,
I
yeah,
was, like,
that's all you need to watch to play the game. You really just need to watch season one,
which is the best.
The good season.
But, I mean, Battlestar Galactica is just an amazing, amazing game. And it makes me sad that it's out of print now. I'm pretty sure it's out of print. Yeah, Fantasy Flight no longer has the license. They made the game. No one else is taking it over yet. Although, WizKids is picking up a lot of those licenses that Fantasy Flight is no longer has. So, I don't know. Who knows? Well, that's more like Games Workshop and stuff like that. But anyway, I digress. That's for the Dice Tower News Network.
We should play that one soon, though, because it's really good.
It is really good.
And I think you'd really like it. And if you watch season one, that's all you need to watch. But back to your question, Chris, about Game of Thrones, the card game. I feel like if I know enough about something, like I just said, oh, I watched season one of Battlestar Galactica. That's enough. I can play the game. And I think my bigger problem with the Game of Thrones card game is it's a living card game and it requires so much investment that I'm so not into that it's like, well, this is a non-starter for me. But if it was a Game of Thrones board game, I don't know if I would, like, if I knew it was based on the show, which is so much further, like, I only watched the first three seasons, I read the first four books, and then I got mad, and I said I'm not reading any more of these books until they're all out, because I'm too irritated, because I can't remember anything that happened in the first four books by the time the fifth book came out. And now I'm just on a Game of Thrones rant, and I have nowhere to go.
Well, I have a question, then. Game of Thrones Catan or normal Catan?
I would probably go normal Catan. Because I'm already kind of like a purist with, like, I don't like a lot of expansions in my games. And I feel like a lot of these IP versions of a classic game are just like a mini expansion that you can't take out of the base game now.
Regular Monopoly or Chicago Monopoly?
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Nothing.
Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I don't know what, like, Game of Thrones Catan is, but in my head, I'm like, this is Chicago Monopoly. This is San Francisco Monopoly. This is, like, Antiopoly. This is, you know, it's like the same game repackaged.
Which, are you more likely to get the repackaged version or the original version?
The original version.
All right. Now, Monopoly is an exception to this. One of the, like, the themed Monopolies tend to be the most valuable ones. You know, obvious. But it's interesting because when we talk about retheming games, like Monopoly, Monopoly is probably, and I'm just going to state it as fact, even though I have no idea, the most rethemed game ever in the history of the universe. And
probably.
It's got
to
be.
Yeah. I mean, it's to the point where you have local rethemes. Like, you won't find a Chicago Monopoly outside of Chicago, but you will definitely find Chicago Monopoly in Chicago. And all major cities are essentially the same thing. You know, Zelda Monopoly, Star Wars, Star Trek, pretty much every IP you can attach to it, there's a Monopoly version of it. But going to a little less rethemed thing, going into more hobby games, Terra Mystica is a fantasy-based kind of Euro-style terrain-controlling
game. It feels
game.
Abstract.
It is. Which, are you more likely to get Terra Mystica or the Gaia Project? Terra Mystica is fantasy. Gaia Project is space.
Neither, because I didn't particularly enjoy the gameplay. I don't know. It's hard for me to detach sometimes. Like, theme is something that a really good theme can get me interested in playing a game. But no matter how good the theme is, if I don't enjoy the mechanics and the gameplay, it's not going to keep me playing a game that I felt meh about.
Okay. Now, a game that you've not played at all, either of you, Mage Knight the Board Game versus Star Trek Frontiers. They are the same. Essentially, Star Trek Frontiers is a retheme of it. If you saw these two things on the shelf, which one are you grabbing? And you're going to grab one. So you're grabbing Fletcher Star Trek.
I don't know. It depends on the art on the box. I feel like space games often have a lot of, like, darkness to them. You know, it's
not a space game. It's a Star Trek game.
Star Trek takes place in space. There's also a lot of blackness. There's usually a lot of ships. There's a lot of... So it depends on, you know, like, oh, am I seeing like a lot... I like the Next Generation. It's the only Star Trek that I'm really like
into. So if it was all Next Generation...
I mean, if it's got Riker on the box, which, you know, I named my dog Riker, I'm all about it. But, you know, if it's like just a picture of the Starship Enterprise floating in blackness, that's not going to draw me in. Whereas, if, you know, if it's some really cool looking Mage Knight art, it's some cool looking stuff. But if it looks, you know, like cheesy fantasy,
All right, one more.
I don't know which is going to draw me in.
One more. Descent, which is a fantasy dungeon crawl, or Star Wars Imperial Assault, which is the exact same game, but Star Wars.
Probably the non-Star Wars version.
I'd probably go Descent. Because I enjoy dungeon crawls, I like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. Maybe this dungeon-y looking game will give me a Dungeons and Dragons feel. I have not really found a Star Wars game that I enjoy, even though I really love the original Star Wars movies.
Oh, there's some pretty good ones out. I mean, Star Wars Rebellion is probably my most favorite.
I feel like it's such a huge IP. There's so many things out there. There's so many things that are licensed. It's just like insane how much of it there is that it is like it tells you nothing about the game anymore.
Yeah. Well, and so basically the point of this was I'm just trying to get a feel for do these IPs turn you off or not? And I mean, I think it's an obvious thing. Some of these, especially for known IPs, if you really like the IP, you're going to be drawn to that version of it. If you don't, then you're going to be pushed away from that version of it. Now, the reason people do IP stuff, the way these publishers do it, is because you are guaranteed a certain audience that you wouldn't otherwise have. Just like you said, if you're walking down the aisle, you see something that's Firefly, you're going to look at that versus you're going to looking at generic fantasy. So having that theme is important. Today, fortunately, designers and publishers are trying to be truer and truer to the themes and making good games around that. Doesn't mean that always happens. There's a number of, you know, Firefly is a good example. There's a number of really bad Firefly games out there, but there's some really, really good ones as well.
There's some really good ones. Yeah.
Yep. And same thing with Star Trek and Star Wars. Like Fantasy Flight has done amazing job with their Star Wars line. You know, love it or not, whether it's overused or there's too much of it or not, they put a lot into Star Wars and, you know, they want to make it something that the fans enjoy, but also make it a game that can hold up on its own as well. Have we learned anything about themes?
As much as we ever learn about our topics.
I don't know. I think it's interesting to kind of look back at these things and just kind of evaluate this. I know that there are certain games that are great that I avoided because of the theme. I mean, Azul, everybody who's ever played it said it was amazing. I just was not drawn into the look and feel of that game in any way, shape, or form. I didn't care how good it was.
I love that game. But I would also just make a mosaic at my house because I think it's fun. So,
well, and now that I've played it, I really, truly enjoy it. I still haven't purchased it because... Again, it just doesn't.
Because I probably will.
Well, I'm hoping you do. But it just doesn't draw me in as one of those games that, like, is compelling to sit on my shelf. And it's sad that that's the case. But it's like, this is our how we look at art, you know? It's like, yeah, okay, fine. I'm certain the Mona Lisa is as great as everyone says it is. But to me, it's just a chick in a frame. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. But
is that a theme song or an art style?
I think it's...
I would agree with you. Like, for me, like, I've never played Munchkin, but looking at the art style just totally turns me off of that game.
Yeah.
I have no desire to, like, learn anything about it because of the art style.
Funny thing about Munchkin is I don't like the Munchkin game, but Munchkin-themed stuff, I am very compelled to get. Munchkin Love Letter? I don't like Love Letter. I don't like Munchkin, but I really like Munchkin Love Letter. I don't know. I think what I'm basically saying is, I have no idea why I like what I like, but I know when I see it that I'm going to like it. Those are my final words. You guys, facial expressions do not show up on podcasts. Like, I swear to God.
I don't know where I came. I think that a good theme can really enhance a game, but a theme for me does not make or break a game.
Agreed.
All right. theme for me can make or break a game, and a good theme allows me to enjoy the system of the game.
Yeah. What is a, or, I know we're like running on time here, but like, what is a game that the theme has, like, once you get through the theme to actually play the game, like, sit down at the table with it, that you just couldn't get past the theme, even if it had great mechanics?
Terraforming Mars.
And I still think...
And First Martian. Both of those, like, I just am not into Mars at all. So it's hard for me to get into those games.
I don't know if they're great games.
Well, I am willing to admit that Terraforming Mars is a great game, but it's the theme that keeps me from diving further into it. Like,
I don't know. I'm going to, like... trick you into playing it in a different skin, and you'll be like,
isn't that what Wingspan is, kind of?
I mean, it's not Terraforming Mars, but it is a good game in a non-offensive skin.
I think the problem with Terraforming Mars is not the theme, it is the art and design.
All right.
Much more than, because the theme itself, I don't think, is the problem. It's really like, I don't know. It's got like a weird table presence for me.
It does. We really got to stop bashing Terraforming Mars. People hate us.
I know. Because it's a good game.
Come on.
No, I like it. That's the thing about Terraforming Mars is like, I want to like it. I do. I just don't know. Like, it's something weird about it. I don't know. And maybe it's just Chris's dislike rubbing off on me over like, that it's like a presence in the room is Chris's.
Actually, I would be interested in. I'm going to give you my copy so you can introduce it to your family and see how your family feels about it.
About Terraforming Mars?
Yeah, because it's not a difficult game to learn. I mean, the iconography you'll have to explain over and over, but like once you have that...
I have to explain it to myself.
Yeah.
Has somebody made a good video on YouTube? I tried finding this when I was trying to teach it at Gamehole Con, and I had such a hard time finding something...
There are lots. I'll send you some links to them. So,
yeah. Okay.
But, all right. We are no longer going to bash Terraforming Mars unless we do an entire episode on Terraforming Mars, which we are not going to do. It's not going to happen.
And it's not a bad game.
It is not. But, it
comes... It's not a perfect game, but it's not bad.
It comes in when we're talking about...
You keep, damning with faint praise. Like, it's not a bad game. It's just not a fun game.
It's just not something I would ever want to have around.
No, First Martians is a bad game.
All right, I'll give you that. Okay, let's end on a positive note.
I was going to say, I want to say something nice now. I don't know.
but do we have anything from... JB says, a game can be great in both cases. Azul, for example, does not need a theme and is great mainly because of its components and rules. Games like Fireball Island and Zaya are more fun because of the theme. And he says, My Little Scythe probably shows every game can be have a theme that's swapped. Some themes do not encourage me to buy a game, but in other cases, the lack of theme does the same. So really what JB is saying here is themes are awesome. Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes you'll buy a game because of it. Sometimes you'll buy a game not because of it. And I think that is exactly sums up our show. All right. Next week is feedback episode. Now that this is fresh in your mind, tell us what you think about themes. I didn't give you guys a lot of heads up on the forums for this one. So shoot us an email at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com. Kitty's going to say all this again, but I just want to remind everyone. And you will be entered to win a gift card. Next month, we're going to do something fun, I think. And we'll tell you about that next week. Follow us on Twitter follow us on Facebook at /tabletopgametalkpodcast. Twitter at tabletopgametlk. Kitty's lawful good mom. Fletch is net Fletch. I am Game Master Chris. Help us out on Patreon. Go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com, and you'll be entered into a $50 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode.
Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons. George, Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Acciaretti, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz, Michael Ohl, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, C. Marie, Rudy Liu.
Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, David Radke, Nick Quickstra, David Zellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Schwartzel, Anne Reynolds.
Eric Hoffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate and Paz Plintham, Sean Peck, Eric Seelander, Mike Smith, Christopher Meyer, Trevor Davis, Wesley Traylor.
Christine, even.
That's what I said, Christine Meyer. And Wesley and Tim and Chris and Joe and Timothy and Glenn and Jesse and Barry and Ben and Emil and Marina and Brady and Gregory. Yes, that's right. I can cheat every once in a while. Gregory Huber, you are new, so I'll give you your full name. Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. Sydney won her first KeyForge tournament today.
She Yay. Won her first?
Yeah. She played me before we started the tournament and beat me. She played me as the first person that she played in the tournament and beat me. And it was only four people. And then, so she played another person and beat him. And then we're like, oh, well, we're going to play the people we haven't played before. And like, no, we're going to play the exact same matches we just played because their tournament software needs some fixing. So she played him again, won again. And then she left. She's like, wait, now I have three chains on my deck?
Oh, chain bound event. Oof.
Yep.